You're good to go.
All right, great, thank you. And you're good?
We're good.
All right, cool. So I'd like to call to order this February 6th meeting of the Health Human Services and Human Rights Committee. Slightly different name, first time saying it. And I just want to start out by thanking Legislator Collins for chairing the Housing Committee that just ended. And that's very exciting to see that take shape into its own committee. And it does change things a little bit here. First thing being the name. So I've called the meeting to order, and the first thing I'm going to do is entertain a motion to adopt or to approve our meeting minutes from December 4th. So do I have a motion to, yep, moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Collins. Any discussion on the December 4th minutes? All right, then all those in favor? Any opposed? All right. The next item on our agenda, we have our the Director of Public Health from our Health Department, Dr. Walter, who is going to give us a little presentation on some of the work the Health Department has done and is doing, and just kind of an overview of where the Health Department is heading. So, Dr. Walter, you can stand there.
Thanks.
I'll move off to the side.
Thanks for having me. You know, the part of my motivation to do this is I, as you all know, served on the legislature. I served on this committee. I even chaired this committee. And honestly, I did not know exactly what was happening over at Department of Health, like to the full depth and breadth. So I thought that it would be very useful for you to know. And I'm really hoping that I get this, we get this presentation from my colleagues, because I would like to know the depth and breadth of all of
That
this.
bus throwing at me.
I told her, I was like, you're next. But yeah, I mean, I was embarrassed that that was the truth, but it was. I'm going to be fast because you have a big agenda, or well, you have your agenda, and also because Chair Criswell invited me in May to talk more about kind of initiatives and new things. So I don't need to do any of that now. This is really just an overview, and then any kind of questions. So I thought it was interesting to kind of point out that we were established in 1947. I think that's pretty cool. And our mission is to protect, promote, and improve the health and well-being of all residents in Ulster County to help them achieve the best quality of life in all stages of life. And what do I aim this towards?
You can just hold it to turn on the website.
Make sure it's not up.
Oh, this one, sorry.
What you gotta do is you gotta click on the presentation now.
I don't even know what that
Yeah,
means. Another one.
you just press the thing.
Press this button.
Oh, darn
You
it.
broke it.
He just said press that button. The arrow.
Arrow.
That's not the button he said.
That's the back arrow. You got just.
If you want to tell me on slide.
So we operate under Public Health Law 602 of Core Public Health Services. So these are the services we have to do. So we have to deal with communicable disease, which is an activities to control and mitigate the extent of infectious diseases. We have to do chronic disease prevention, environmental health, looking at legal and regulatory actions designed to improve and protect public health. I'll say with environmental health, we are what's called a full service Department of Health. There are other counties that have partial service, and their environmental health is done by the state, but in our county, it's done by the county. Family health, which is activities designed to reduce perinatal, infant, and maternal mortality, public health emergency preparedness, education on public health issues, educating people about health factors to influence it and how to improve it, and development of policies to build and maintain a strong public health organizational infrastructure. None of these are my words. This is the state's words that guide all the work we do. Next. Okay, so we're made up of several different divisions. Sorry, you know this. So our divisions, which I'm going to get into a little bit more, but just so you see, and I kind of like made some things overlap in on purpose. So we have patient services, we have women, infant, and children, and in some of those ways they overlap with patient services, which also overlaps a little bit with health promotion, chronic disease prevention, which overlaps a little bit with public health preparedness, which overlaps a little bit with environmental health. Medical examiner, I kind of stuck on its own. I mean, it doesn't really overlap, but they all overlap with public health. And so this is we're approaching public health from each of these different perspectives. All right, so patient services, we do adult and child immunizations. We cover a large gamut of adult and child immunizations. We also are getting back into, we had to stop at COVID, and then we didn't have enough nurses. If for those of you who are here during COVID, I think we had almost no nurses at Department of Health. We contracted, and now we are building up. I mean, it's incredible. We just offered one more nurse a position today, so we're building up. So once we're solid in that, we're going to reinstitute the home visits for high-risk births, which I have out in the public have heard people say, what's happened with that? I loved that when I had my child, so we're going to get that back going. STI clinics and TB clinics. So also, we were limited in our capacity. We were sending a lot of the STI services over to the Institute for Family Health. We've been able to bring it all back, thanks to the executive and you all for allowing us to have the staffing that we need to do that. For women, infants, and children, this focuses on nutrition for mothers and children. This includes SNAP enrollment. We do breastfeeding education and nutritional education, and they set themselves up in Kingston, Saugerties, New Paltz, and Ellenville on different days so that they can try to reach out to different parts of the county. Michael, really making sure I go through this fast. So for environmental health is our largest department. I think this is probably 24, 25 people. So we protect the public water sources and improve water and septic plans for any kind of new development. If the development is not on municipal water, but we also regulate the municipal water systems. So New Paltz has it, Saugerties, various other ones. We ensure safe food preparation. This is both restaurants and vendors, temporary food. We ensure safe children's camps, public pools and beaches, safe migrant farm worker housing, mobile home parks, and temporary residents. So before you go to the next, you'll see already this is quite a lot that we are regulating. This is all defined by the state. These are places that have to get permits, get inspections, get approvals, get cited if they're not doing what they're supposed to do. In addition, we have a lead poisoning program, mostly situated in environmental health, but partially in patient services. We have two arms to it, CLIP and LIP. So in CLIP, it's a preventative where anyone who identifies a home that should be tested for lead, if DSS says, I'm concerned about this home, aging, mental health, one of you say, I'm concerned about this home, I think it ought to be tested, we have to get permission from the owner or the renter or whomever to come in and test. If we find lead, then regulatory stick comes in, and now we oversee. They need to have a work plan. We check that they've done the work that they have to do. So it's not regulatory at the first stage. It's regulatory if we find lead. So it's primarily focused in Kingston and Ellenville. That's where we get paid back by the state. However, if someone is not in one of those two places and they need to be lead tested, we're going to send our people to get the lead testing. LIP is a little bit different, and this includes our nurses. So any child who has a lead level that's over 5, we get alerted. And so now regulatory jumps right in immediately because there's a lead level over 5 of a child. And so now we go into that site, we do the testing, we work on a work plan, we oversee the work plan and make sure that the place is safe. And we keep checking in with the child until they're clear, until they show a blood test where their lead level is below 5. We also respond to rabies. People call us and our guy goes out there and pops off the head, and we have a cute little lab that he tests for rabies. People give us their ticks. My team asked me not to promote this because they don't want to spend all their time testing ticks. We cannot tell a person if they're infected. Like, even if the tick's infected, the person may not be. So we'll test the ticks, but we'll say to them, you need to go to the doctors if you're worried about yourself. So we only test the ticks there. We also regulate illegal tobacco and vape sales. So for tobacco, it's underage tobacco sales. We actually do sting operations where we bring in somebody who is underage and typically who doesn't necessarily look underage. And we have them go and try to buy cigarettes. And if it's sold, then they get cited. And then with illegal vapes, so flavored vapes are not allowed, as well as any vape sale to a minor. So they go and they do inspections, and if they identify it. This, as well as this, probably for the most part, although there's some other things, some of the restaurants we have it, but this causes our biggest nightmare in informal hearings. So we do informal hearings where someone's just started to show a problem and we sit down with them and try to say, look, please, let's fix this. If they're not fixing it, then we have to bring it to formal hearings. So we have to bring in attorneys. It's difficult. It's really, really difficult. We have a board of health that dictates that I am not allowed to reduce fines. So, but I get the message all the time from the attorneys. They want to know if they can reduce it. My board of health says we're not reducing it. So I have the power from the board of health to say the fine is the fine. Health promotion and chronic disease prevention. So a lot of this is both coalition building with other organizations, other departments. So we have a heart health coalition that has a lot of different agencies across the county as a part of this. I forgot my why. Healthy Ulster County Coalition, which is a more generic one, not focused just on heart. But this year we're going to, I'd like them to pay attention and start doing initiatives around healthy at every size. This was something that I may have said during my interviews and in my other, that this is an alternative to obesity response is healthy at every size. Obesity is very poorly measured. It's a bad measurement and nothing has done, none of the prevention activities have helped this. This is an innovative initiative, I think, Johns Hopkins or somewhere else has created this healthy at every size. So we're making that the focus of how to be healthy at every size. They also do media education awareness, radio ads, TV, billboards, buses, and social media. And they do presentations at fairs, events, organizations, and schools. We have a public health preparedness, which works with Ulster County Emergency Response, preparing for disease outbreaks and weather-related events. Emergency response has sort of a dictionary or what to do for emergency events. And one of the things that I identified pretty quickly when I was told that there were fires was, what do I do? I didn't know what I should do. I was like, thanks for telling me, but what do I do? So we worked with our medical director to come up for every single health event. What would public health do? So in terms of if individuals have medication that they're in a refrigerator and they're going to lose power, we're going to find out if any of those people who have to leave their home, whether it's a flood or a fire or whatever, power outage, do you have a way, you know, we'll have ways for them to store their medication in a cooler or various other kinds of things, how to talk about heat exhaustion, heat stroke, those kinds of things. I just so you know, for more work for you all. I did talk to Everett. My thought was that all of us should have a what do we do when one of these things happen? And he was very supportive of expanding his response plan so that we all have it. And sometimes it's just messaging, like what's the social media message we want to put out? It's not necessarily that you're running to the scene. It's that, you know, what should I do right now? And they focus on both disease outbreaks and weather-related events. And then we have the medical examiner's office. So they investigate deaths that may affect public interest, such as sudden, unexpected, or unexplained deaths. So if the person clearly died of natural causes, you're not going to call the medical examiner. Very often, the medical examiner will get a call. They'll assess the situation and determine that it is not applicable. So it's a referral. But then other times it is, they go to the scene. They take down a lot of investigative notes. It's an incredible team of deputy medical examiners. And then we perform the autopsies currently in the basement of Westchester Medical Center. And last but not least, so in general, you know, our hopes are strengthening our impact. COVID took a real toll on how people think about public health. There's a lack of trust in public health, lack of knowledge of what public health is. I've listened to many seminars where even public health professionals are asked, what is public health? And they don't have good answers. So over this next however many years I'm in this position or more, you know, we want to work on improving the trust in public health, improve awareness of our programs. If we're not that sure what these programs are, then how's the rest of the county supposed to know? We really want to identify and meet some unmet needs. So we're already starting to hear some things. Like, for example, we don't do anything for the aging population. My nurses would love to consider going to homes and assessing for injury risk. But we have to figure out how to do that and find a grant or something to do. But so we're constantly thinking about what are we doing that we could do and how do we do that? And then be prepared to protect our county's health because there are continuously needs to be responsive. And that's it.
So we'll do just a few questions. We'll start with, I saw Legislator Collins, then McCullough, then Harmon.
I didn't hear anything about opiate addiction. Is that part of...
So, when we divided with mental health, there was a bit of work with Tara and I on staying on our lanes. So that mostly falls under mental health. However, we are working on bringing back an opioid and substance fatality review board, which will be a partnership between Department of Health and Department of Mental Health. So we're committed to helping with the data element of it, but the services response and everything falls under mental health. To me, like, staying in a lane is very important. And so we talk a lot about, like, this is you, this is me. And so that we make sure we're not duplicating efforts and being efficient.
And the data that drives the work that we do comes from your office.
Exactly.
Partnership that
exists. My question is regarding lead level in children. I heard the number 5. Is that the max or does it go higher?
It goes higher.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of little letters after that 5, but but if, as soon as it hits 5, that's when we consider that lead poisoning.
Question,
sorry. So I've got Legislator Harmon next, and then we're going to go to Legislator Nolan.
Dr. Walter, I'm curious about, to the extent that you are able, what you might anticipate the trickle-down impacts on your office being, given the events that we're watching unfold at the federal level. And that's a huge question, I know, but maybe...
Well, I can speak to some that have already occurred. So our access to data and the federal government health departments are not allowed to put out information currently. So when we are tracking things like influenza and other things, we used to have national comparisons. Our data is now already about a month old. So we don't get to keep track of that. On our side, I'm having my team just pull any data from the federal government down so we can have it. But that's one of the challenges, and it's publicly known that they aren't communicating that, aren't allowed to communicate out to us. So we can't necessarily know what's happening nationally. We know in the state and we have those meetings, but we don't know how things are. So we'll know which flu strand is prevalent, but we can't say for sure if that's the same or that different from what's happening in the other states without, calling the state. So that's a primary thing. It's just the information.
In following up with that, any thoughts on what vaccinations will look like and what gender affirming care will look like? And then I'm making this up as we go along, as we all are. How would you like to be able to coordinate state to state directly?
Okay, so the first question is, the state has its own laws about vaccination and transgender care, and so we follow what the state tells us to do. And currently we have had no change from the state from what they want us to do. So there's no changes that I have to put into place at this moment. In terms of state to state, local Department of Health are on several different kinds of groups. So we are on NYSHCHO, which is New York's Association of County Health Officials, which is a part of NACHO, which is a National County Health Officials. So we have people who are talking to other states So it may not be me, but I'm in these groups that are talking to these other states. People in New York State Department of Health are talking to their equivalent in other states. So me as a local health department don't, if I can, if I wanted to join NACHO, be a part of those conversations. But technically, we tell our people talk to them. And so we have a communication. It exists. It's not me personally, but, you know, they have been keeping the communication lines happening.
Thank you.
Legislator Nolan.
I'd like to slip in a follow-up of Legislator McCullough's question about lead, which I really appreciate. And I know that if the level of 5 is the current cutoff, the higher above that that is, the more likely you are to have impairments related to it. But there's no safe level of lead. And so I'm expecting that maybe our county will keep an eye and maybe look to do some innovative things for people who have lead levels that are measurable, which in my mind, problematic.
Yeah, you know, where there's place, if there is an interest to do something and respond, then you would have to, you know, if state allows it, if it's allowable, we recognize that there are some things that we cannot do local law over. An example is we explored whether for PFAS, whether we could be more reactive to PFAS levels because the federal government wants it down. I think it's, I'm going to make up these numbers, but something like, to 4, but in by 2030, but New York State is still at 10. And so I looked into, can we put into place something to do if it's 4? And we were told we can't because we don't regulate the water, we regulate the system. But, you know, so again, it depends on what part we regulate, what part we don't. We're always happy to have a conversation about ways to expand the services. I will say the hidden challenge with the lead testing is that it can be pricey for someone to remediate. And if they don't, we do have to eventually, I mean, we'll do everything we can to help them, but if they don't ever do it, if they absolutely refuse, we would have to declare the place uninhabitable, which means that housing talk conversation you had, we're only contributing to it. So we're very thoughtful. We really want to help, and we're trying to find ways of getting to solutions with homeowners and landlords particularly, because we don't want a response to an important issue to lead to a whole other problem. And so we're very, very thoughtful about that.
The other question I have may also be on some of those interfaces. And I neglect to say thank you for this. This is very, very helpful questions answered also. You talked about tobacco and vaping. Is there anything that comes to your to the health department for CBD now?
Not currently. No, I think all that is still regulated on a state level. Yeah, there's certain things that, you know, there's no county. We don't permit those. The state permits those. So if we don't permit, we don't inspect it. We permit, we inspect it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Thank you. Thank you.
Father, I'm going to do something with the slides, or
yes, we're going to turn the PowerPoint off.
Okay.
All right.
Over my shoulder.
Yes. So keeping the speaker at the top right. Speaker.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool.
Can you just tap me on the shoulder if you raise it? Put it behind me. All right, cool. So thank you so much, Dr. Walter. So we'll go into resolutions. We've got a handful of resolutions that are for the Community Services Board, for the Health Board, and for the Youth Board. And I was going to ask if folks have, you know, taken a look at those. We typically don't see a lot of objections to any of those. I was going to suggest that we block them, unless there are any specific appointees that we wanted to discuss. Otherwise, I'm going to, in a moment, kind of feed the block language out there. But I just wanted to give folks a second to decide if they're comfortable with that. I'm happy to take them individually otherwise, but I think we can block them.
So I'm seeing nodding heads. So I'm going to ask for a motion to block resolutions 3, 4, 5, 8, 11, and 12.
I'll move to block.
All right, moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator Collins. Any discussion on the action of blocking these resolutions? All right, seeing no discussion on the action, I'm going to call a vote on the act of blocking them. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so these resolutions are in a block. The block is resolutions 3, 4, 5, 8, 11, and 12. And is there any discussion on the appointments to these boards? Okay. Well, I just want to say I appreciate all of these folks for being willing to step up and serve, in some cases continue serving. This stuff is, you know, this is unpaid work and sometimes thankless work, but it's really important. So we appreciate it. I will call the question on the block. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Cool. So that brings us to resolution number 7, approving the execution.
Six.
Resolution 6, which is number 7 on my agenda. Yeah, that's right. Resolution number 6. Resolution number 6. Approving the execution of a contract amendment for $128,062 entered into by the county with Gateway Community Industries doing business as Gateway Hudson Valley. And Deputy Director Carney, do you want to, for the...
Oh, Williams. You said Carney.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's an adjustment to the stated contract for Casa Williams.
Okay. Cool. Is there... Then nothing more than that. Any questions? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 6.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Do you get the nomination in a second?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay, cool. I was not paying attention in that moment. All right, resolution number 7, approving the execution of a contract amendment, $52,703, entered by the county with Mental Health Associates in Ulster County, Inc., through the Department of Mental Health, Deputy Director Williams.
It's another possible looking adjustment.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 7. Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution number 9, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute a grant application with required assurances for the Medicare improvements for patients and providers, Act, MIPA, with the New York State Office for the Aging. And Director Copenhaver, do you want to give us any background on this?
Sure. We do this every couple of years, and so our grant application to get our funding for our MIPA consultant who goes out and specifically targets folks who are low-income older adults who do not qualify for Medicaid to get them enrolled in this wonderful program so they save a lot more money.
Any questions or rebuttals? All right, then I'll entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 9. Moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor? Any opposed?
Aye.
Resolution number 10, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $32,000, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered by the county with ConnectAmerica.com, the Office for the Aging, and Director Copenhaver.
ConnectAmerica is our PERS provider. PERS is a personal emergency response system, the buttons that we hand out for folks. And we're adding some money to the contract year to make sure it's not short, but it's on there.
And what's the funding source for this? Is this for the county? I know it's on the resolution.
That's so far. Sorry, that's so far. So that's a lot of money.
Got it.
I set it to New York State Health Affiliation. ICEP is our expanded in-home services for elderly. We get a very large grant every year for both the feds and the state to support services in-home. It's part of our case management plan, which is the PERS unit, the home-delivered meals, case management, and also the aides that go into the home. It's all part of ICEP.
Yeah, we have in our sheet that it's
75% state, 25% county for this.
Oh, okay. No thanks. Vets are involved in the meals off, like, separated out, yeah.
It also could be, you know, it could be federal money flowing through the state in some way. Okay, great. Any questions from the committee? All right, then I'll entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 10. Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. All right. So we're moving on to... It's that one already. Moving on to resolution number 13, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Office of Children and Family Services for the Multidisciplinary Team Child Advocacy Center Program and amend the 2025 budget through the Department of Social Services. Commissioner Iaposi, do you want to give us a background?
I'll start, then I'll hand it off to Deputy Commissioner Rita Wood. So this was a welcome surprise of additional funding from OCFF for children's advocacy centers.
Yeah, it's a total, we got a grant amount of $66,666 to spend between January and August of this year. It's a one-time amount for it, and it's for the Advocacy Center, which is our NDT team, between probation, social services, DA's office, sheriff's department, mental health. We work with families that are subjects of the severest abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, and fatalities in child welfare. So we're using it to purchase a vehicle for the Advocacy Center for transportation of families to and from different places, investigations, and we're also doing a partnership with crime victims to have an community educator to go out into the schools and the community to talk about child abuse, sexual abuse, and how to help children come forward or, you know, talk to them about it.
Additional allocations are sometimes challenging to arrive at how to utilize them because it's not necessarily going to be something that we can anticipate to have available going forward. So the additional vehicle is something that we've really seen a need for. And you know, it's great timing to be able to have that opportunity.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Yep, Legislator Nolan.
Adding on to the committee.
Yeah.
Is it by any chance going to be an electric vehicle or a hybrid vehicle?
I'm sorry.
The vehicle that will be purchased, will it be an electric or hybrid?
It'll be hybrid. We go through the process with Kim over at Central Auto. We follow all the procedures for that, and we actually put out a bid and got a response back. So we're ready to order it.
And it ended up being... what part of the $66,000?
It's going to be approximately $50,000 and change. That'll include not just the vehicle, but the cost to register it and insure it initially for that piece of it. And then we'll cover the full amount of it.
Wonderful. Yes, thank you. Yeah. Very excited for that.
Legislator McCullough?
How are we going to cover the expenses going forward after this money is depleted going forward? Maintenance and...
So I feel that with the annual allocation we get,
okay,
we can utilize the expenses shouldn't be more than $1,000 per year, roughly, going forward. So with the life expectancy of the vehicle, we feel that we'll be able to budget that with the allocation that we anticipate receiving.
Thank you.
And the vehicle is going to be based on the Albany Avenue base there?
Yep.
What kind of vehicle is it going to be?
Was it a van?
No, it's a RAV. RAV4.
Okay.
Mm. I mean, like what we're getting?
Yeah, I think it's an SUV style.
The RAV4?
Yeah,
it's a RAV4, I think it is. Cool.
I know it's in compliance with the fleet requirements.
Great.
We went through that process.
Great. Any other questions from the committee? Any points of discussion? All right, then I'll entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 13. Moved by Legislator Harbin, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Right.
Resolution number 14, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $131,445 entered by the county with Youth Advocate Programs, Inc. through the Department of Social Services. So, Commissioner Iaposi or Deputy Commissioner Wood, is there any background you'd like to share on this one?
Some background on this is that we RFP'd all of our children and family service provider contracts in 2024, and we ended up selecting new providers that are going to be providing services to a lot of our population. But to transition those cases, we ended up extending some of the contract with our prior providers. And Deputy Commissioner Wood can talk in a little bit more detail about what that has looked like.
Yeah, the Youth Advocate Program serves about 30 children. And so this was our time. Children's Home of Wyoming got the new contract. So it's just trying to transition those that are close to 17 and 18 aging out of the program, and then getting them on board with the new service provider. So it's just till March 31st. We've been transitioning since December, and I think we're down to 12 children right now for the next month. That'll be picked up by Children's Home of Wyoming. Everybody else has moved on or aged out of the program.
Any questions from the committee? All right, any discussion? And I will entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 14. Moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor? Anybody opposed? Resolution number 15, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $46,800, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 and entered into by the county with Resource Center for Accessible Living, the Department of Social Services, and Commissioner Iaposi.
Sure. So this is just basically what was set forth in the resolution. This will be the final extension under the contract. And this is something that Resource Center for Accessible Living provides to us in terms of managing funds for clients who can't manage their Social Security and disability benefits on their own. They've done an excellent job over the course of time doing that to ensure that those benefits are spent on meeting the recipient's needs.
Any questions from the committee? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 15. Moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, cool. That is the last resolution. I don't have any new business. We don't have any old business. I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Moved by Legislator Collins, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, great.
Cool.
Aye.